Section 1. You will hear a phone conversation between a man from a travel agency and a woman who wants to make travel and accommodation arrangements for a trip. First, you will have some time to look at questions 1 to 5. You will see that an example has been done for you. On this occasion only, the conversation relating to this will be played first.
Good afternoon, Maverick Travel, Gavin speaking. How can I help you today?
Oh, hello, Gavin. I have a week or so left over from a business trip to Melbourne, and a colleague recommended that I spend a few days in the Northern River region. He suggested that I contact your travel agency to arrange a trip there.
We would certainly be happy to do that for you, madam. Can I ask what kind of accommodation you have in mind?
My colleague said he stayed at a lodge there near the state park.
Oh, yes. That would be the Red River Lodge.
Yes, that's it. I'd like to stay there if possible.
The woman wants to stay at Red River Lodge, so Red River Lodge has been written in the space. Now we shall begin. You should answer the questions as you listen, because you will not hear the recording a second time. Listen carefully and answer questions 1 to 5.
Good afternoon, Maverick Travel, Gavin speaking. How can I help you today?
Oh, hello, Gavin. I have a week or so left over from a business trip to Melbourne, and a colleague recommended that I spend a few days in the Northern River region. He suggested that I contact your travel agency to arrange a trip there.
We would certainly be happy to do that for you, madam. Can I ask what kind of accommodation you have in mind?
My colleague said he stayed at a lodge there near the state park.
Oh, yes. That would be the Red River Lodge.
Yes, that's it. I'd like to stay there if possible.
And on what dates would you like to stay there?
I'd like to go there on Saturday, on September 26th, and stay there for 3 nights.
Just give me a moment, please, while I check if they have any vacancies. Yes, they do. Would you like to stay in a standard room in the main building, or would you like a cabin by the river?
Is there much of a difference in price?
A standard room is $150 a night, and the cabins are $230 a night, but they come with a fully equipped kitchen. The view of the river and the forest you get from there is well worth it. Meals are available at the lodge, but are not included in the price.
And it's probably a bit quieter there, too. Okay, I'll take that option then. Can I get a train there?
You take a train to Rivertown and someone from the resort will pick you up from there. The train takes around 2 hours from Melbourne to Rivertown and then it's about a 30-minute drive to the lodge. When would you like to travel? In the morning or afternoon?
I've arranged to have lunch with a friend, so in the afternoon.
Okay, there's a train at 2:09 and another one at 4:29. Which would you prefer?
I think I'll take the earlier one, thanks. How much is the ticket?
A one-way ticket to Rivertown is $57. And would you like me to get a return ticket for you?
No, I'll take care of that when I get there. I might decide to stay an extra couple of days to do some work from there. And where do I take the train from? Central Station?
No. Trains from Melbourne to the country leave from City West Station. You can pick your ticket up there at the ticket collection counter.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 6 to 10. Now listen and answer questions 6 to 10.
Do they have internet there?
Yes, there is indeed. I will need you to pay for the ticket now. How would you like to pay for it? Credit card?
Yes, I'll use my Visa card.
Fine. Would you like to pay for your lodge stay now as well, or when you get there?
I'll take care of that when I get there.
Fine. Can you give me the name as it appears on your card?
Sure. Barbara G. Swanston.
Barbara G.
Swanston, S-W-A-N-S-T-O-N.
Got it. Thank you, Miss Swanston. And the number?
3869-1930-5741-2796.
Got that. And the expiry date?
March 2025. It's a platinum card. What time does the train arrive?
The train gets to Rivertown at 4:15. You should arrive at the lodge before 5 in time to catch the sunset, unless you want to ask the driver to stop at a supermarket on the way so you can stock up on food supplies.
I might do that. I've heard there are a lot of trails through the forest. Is that right?
Yes, there are a lot of well-marked trails throughout the forest. The area has a variety of wildlife.
None of it dangerous, I hope.
No, none of it is dangerous. If you fancy a bit of fishing, the lodge provides fishing equipment to its guests. They also provide free mountain bikes, which is a great way to see the forest.
Oh, that sounds nice.
It is. The lodge can arrange a boat tour of the lakes that form at this time of the year. The area is renowned for its bird life, especially the water birds, which come to breed there at this time of the year. A half-day tour with an expert on the local area will cost you $90.
Oh, I might do that. I'm sure I would get some great photos.
I'm sure you would. Now, if I can just get some more details from you, Miss Swanston, to finalise the booking.
That is the end of Section 1. You now have half a minute to check your answers. Now turn to Section 2. Section 2. You will hear a speech by a historian to a group of foreign students. First, you have some time to look at questions 11 to 15. Listen carefully and answer questions 11 to 15.
Hello, everyone, and thanks so much for attending this month's history presentation. My name's Kathy Smith, and I'm the executive director of the Lees Summit Historical Society. Now, many of you probably haven't heard of Lees Summit, but by the end of our time together today, you'll hopefully understand a lot more about this city and its historical significance. Okay, let me start by saying that Lees Summit is a suburb of Kansas City, Missouri, and is located in the Midwest region of the United States. It has a population of about 90,000 people. One of the things that makes Lees Summit so unique is its sense of itself. What I mean by that is that it is unlike so many other cities that have survived many periods of change and upheaval. It maintains a connection with, and remains true to, its historical roots. People from the city are proud of its history, for better or worse, and the city itself serves as a model for similar communities across the U.S., both in terms of its community mentality and its efforts to preserve historical landmarks and artifacts. Recently, Lees Summit celebrated its 150th anniversary, although it wasn't always known by the name it has today. Well, let's skip back to October 28th, 1865, when a man named William B. Howard registered an 11-block area in an area called Big Cedar. He called this new development Struthers, and today that area makes up the central downtown portion of Lees Summit. Upon its founding, Struther only had 100 residents. About 3 years later, the town's name was changed to Town of Lees Summit. Now, as you know, summit refers to the top of a hill or mountain. Changing the name made sense in a way, because the town's elevation represents the highest point on the rail line that links two other cities in Missouri. Kansas City, famous for barbecue and jazz music, and St. Louis, which has one of America's most famous landmarks, the St. Louis Arch. Well, there are two other theories about why the town's name was changed. Many people moved to Lee's Summit from the southern states, where General Robert E. Lee commanded the Confederates during the Civil War. Some folks believe that the town was named after him. Also, there was a locally famous resident named Dr. Pleasant Lee, and, though the town's name is spelled differently, perhaps the town was named in his honor instead, with the spelling mistake being blamed on railroad sign painters. To this day, no one's completely sure which reason is the truth.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 16 to 20. Now listen and answer questions 16 to 20.
The town now known as Lee's Summit has been home to some famous, or shall I say infamous, figures in American history. The most infamous, of course, was Cole Younger, who earned the title the Last Great Outlaw. When you think of Wild West shootouts between sheriffs and bandits in cowboy hats, you're probably thinking of people like Mr. Younger and his brothers. Though he lived most of his life outside the law, he helped to protect historical homes in Lee's Summit from Union troops who were ordered to burn every structure in a three-county area. He eventually renounced his life of crime and lived his final years as a model citizen. He died in Lee's Summit, and his gravesite receives many visitors each year. Who else? Well, American businessmen like R.A. Long and J.J. Pryor moved to the area to begin their ventures in lumber and construction industries. Pryor was also an associate of Tom Pendergast, who controlled a vast political operation that was ultimately responsible for launching the career of one Harry S. Truman, the 33rd American president. Nowadays, Lee's Summit may be more closely associated with the Metheny family, who have lived there for several generations. Jazz legend Pat Metheny has 3 gold albums and 20 Grammy Awards, and is the only person ever to have earned Grammys in 10 different categories. Some of his instruments and other memorabilia can be found in our local museum. Well, as you can see, for such a small town, Lee's Summit has been a focal point for important historical events and the birthplace of some noteworthy people. Perhaps that's why we take historical preservation so seriously, since it serves as a thread that ties the local residents together. Now, if you have any questions...
That is the end of Section 2. You now have half a minute to check your answers. Now turn to Section 3. Section 3. You will hear a marketing professor, Dr. Ross, having a conversation with two of her students about social media marketing. First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 24. Now listen carefully and answer questions 21 to 24.
Please have a seat, ladies. Holly, you emailed me last Friday about wanting to come by my office to discuss the final assignment. How can I be of assistance?
Thanks for seeing us, Dr. Ross. I'm here to get the updated information about the assignment. Well, that and I have questions about the social media unit coming up in class. I'm still confused about how it relates to marketing.
Right, now I remember. You're going to miss the upcoming lecture because you'll be out of class for the next 2 weeks, right? Away for a sports competition?
Yes, 2 weeks. But I'll have access to emails and shared files, so finishing up the project should be easy enough while I'm on the road. My problem really is that, besides what we read in the textbook, I really have no clue what to write for the social media part.
I see. And Jessica, how's your assignments coming along? You seemed stressed last week in class during the group discussion.
Honestly, Dr. Ross, I'm a bit lost. Our textbook is a bit outdated, so the chapter about internet-based marketing methods doesn't really cover social media marketing very well. Any background information you could give us would be great.
Okay, we better get started then. First of all, remember that we changed the due date on the assignment, so you have one extra week to do it, and the extensions will be granted on a case-by-case basis. Friday, March 10th by 5 p.m. is the deadline, and as far as social media marketing goes, why don't you start by telling me what you both have learned so far? Who wants to go first?
Well, obviously, we all know by now what social media is. It means sites like Facebook and apps like Twitter. What I'm having trouble with is finding a good general definition for it.
If I may, I started thinking about it like this. Social media is the way, or medium, we use to interact now.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 25 to 30. Now listen and answer questions 25 to 30.
That's the essence of it, Jessica. Basically, anything online which allows us to conduct a social function would certainly qualify. Social functions, then, would include what, Holly?
Photos for sure. I don't know anyone who doesn't post their pics on a regular basis. Let me see, what else? Updates, relationship status, stuff like that.
Yep. Conducting social functions is just like saying reaching out to people. Communication, basically. Business and organizations use social media to conduct functions like commerce, promotion, and charity. How does all that tie into search engine results, though? Jessica?
This is the part that frustrates me. I just think of them as having no effect on each other. When I want to search something, I use Google. If I want to private message someone, I use something else. Think about it, though. References to products and recommendations come up all the time when people communicate online. People talk about everything from movies to toothpaste, and someone might make a buying decision based on what a friend, colleague, or family member said, right?
Yeah, I guess. Companies know this, so they have shifted their marketing strategies away from paid search and onto social media because it lets them find customers more easily. They can get very specific information about the people who might be interested in their products. Why is that important, Holly?
It certainly beats paying vast sums of money for things paid search results and pay-per-click. While they work for things like creating awareness of a company's brand, they aren't useful for getting the right message to the right person at the right time.
Very good. Nearly everything about social media marketing is superior to traditional search methods because the research obtained can be used to target customers more reliably with less expense. Do either of you want to guess what percentage of business are involved in social media marketing of some type?
I would say 70%.
Keep going.
80%?
Close enough.
A study conducted in 2015, it was 85%, and it's sure to be higher now. Advertising revenue is already in the billions, so it's safe to say that it's the future of marketing, for better or worse.
That is the end of section three. You now have half a minute to check your answers. Now turn to section four. Section four. You will hear a man giving a talk on digital publishing. First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 35. Listen carefully and answer questions 31 to 35.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is James Selby, and I've been asked here today to talk to you about digital publishing. I am both a traditionally published and digitally self-published author, but a little more about myself and self-publishing later. First, I'd like to begin by giving you a little historical overview on digital publishing that has led to the self-publishing phenomenon that we have today. The first digital document, a digitized version of the American Declaration of Independence, was produced by Project Gutenberg in 1971, and this is regarded as the birth of digital publishing. But the internet, as people knew it then, existed mostly in computer labs in California and European universities. So, unlike Gutenberg and his printing press, this event went by largely unnoticed. The next major stage in digital publishing came about in the 1980s, following the development of the CD-ROM. Some newspaper and magazine companies experimented with them, but found only a small audience. Publishing companies, however, realized that, compared to storing magazines in newspapers, they could save a lot of space and use them mainly for the storage of archival material and past editions. Electronic books, or e-books, began to appear in the early 1990s, coinciding with the exponentially growing number of internet users. But their formats made them commercially unattractive to most book readers. Towards the end of the 90s, there was the appearance of the first e-book stores. There was also the introduction of the world's first tablet device. But this turned out to be more of a business tool, and, like online e-book stores, a little complicated for most people to use. A large Japanese company probably thought it had a winner when it released its electronic book reader, or e-reader, in 2006. It was the first device to have an innovative paper-like screen, providing an experience that was the closest yet to reading a paper book. But the device itself and their online store were not very user-friendly. The real boost the e-book industry needed would come the following year, when a major American online book retailer brought out its own ebook reader, a device that reproduced the functions of its Japanese predecessor, yet was easy to use and appealed to ordinary readers. Though other electronics and internet companies have released their own e-readers, this large American online book retailer is still responsible for over two-thirds of all ebook sales. With publishing books becoming cheaper and easier, aspiring authors the world over soon found themselves attracted to this alternative route to getting published, and I was one of them.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 36 to 40. Now listen and answer questions 36 to 40.
Getting a book published is not easy for a first-time author. I had to suffer many rejections from various traditional publishers and their editors, and then do major revisions before getting my first book published. And even then, as an author, you only receive 10 or 20% of the sales of your book, which is not a lot when the print run is only 1,000 and your book sells for $10 a copy. This is what got me into self-publishing. If I get a book self-published, the publisher gets 20% of the sales, not the other way around like it is with the traditional publishing houses. And I really enjoy the feedback from my readers. Writing can be a pretty solitary pursuit. But when I upload a novel one chapter at a time, I get immediate responses from them, which I always reply to. They are, in effect, like my editors, spotting things I may have missed, suggesting plot alternatives. Taking the alternative route to traditional publishing, though, can come at a price. While plagiarism is almost unheard of in mainstream publishing, the incidence of people copying others' work and passing it off as their own has been happening with disconcerting regularity in the e-publishing industry, frequently driven more by a desire for recognition and respect than for money. This can range from stealing the plots and ideas of others to virtually copying entire texts. Often, the so-called authors of these stolen works hide behind fake online identities, and even then they may reside in a country different to the author, making any legal action difficult to both pursue and enforce. About the only remedial course of action available is for the publisher to withdraw the title from the market. Many digital publishing companies, though, fearing getting caught up in protracted legal proceedings, are reluctant to ban these writers who steal and copy from others for good. Many writers who take the traditional publishing paths are skeptical of self-publishing, believing that the majority of self-published first novels are not good enough to be published in the first place. Good novels, they claim, require good editors, enticing cover designs, and people experienced in marketing and publicity. Further eroding their claims to be serious authors is the fact that many ebook authors seem to spend more time promoting and marketing their books than they do writing just to survive in the e-publishing business. A self-published ebook is unlikely to ever be reviewed in the mainstream press, nor are they eligible for prestigious prizes. For a writer aspiring to gain and build a reputation and major following, or any form of credible literary acclaim, I would advise them to first try getting picked up by a major publisher. But if, like me, you enjoy writing as a hobby rather than a profession, then self-publishing is something you should look further into.
That is the end of section 4. You now have half a minute to check your answers. That is the end of the listening test. You now have 10 minutes to transfer your answers to the listening answer sheet.